The Closing Mark Report, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Let's turn our attention to the marketplace at this hour. Along with us this afternoon are three of our regular analysts that you hear on Commodity Week or the Closing Market Report. Next to me on stage is Bill Mayer. He's with Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign. Good morning to you, Bill, or rather good afternoon to you, Bill. It's been a long day, apparently, here at the Farm Progress Show. Glad to have you on board.
Good afternoon. Glad to be here.
Well, let's start with you and crop insurance in particular. Producers probably thinking about crop insurance more now than they have for a while, simply because it's been a few years since they've had to think about what crop insurance payments are really going to look like. But certainly this year, that will be the case.
Yeah, it's going to be variable, of course, depending on where you're at, what kind of yield that you have. We're still a ways away. If a guy's looking at 85% coverage and he's going to have an average yield, or let's say meets his APH, we're still a little ways away from on the corn and the beans as far as getting down the numbers that would pay. But I think we have a lot of situations where we have less than APH yields that guys are looking at. And they're at these level price levels, they're looking at some payments. And one of the things that you have to look at is whether, you know, do you try to lock some of that in, or, you know, that's a question I think you've got to ask. It's probably too early to get real excited about that right now.
Alan Brugler is next to you. He is with Brugler Marketing and Management out of Omaha, Nebraska. Drove in, made the trip across parts of Nebraska and Iowa and through Illinois. Two questions for you. What did the crop look like, and how did it change as you moved from the west to the east? And did you see any combines running?
Okay, I'll answer the second one first. I did not see any combines running. I saw one soybean field that had completely turned. So, you know, we're getting close, but no, I didn't see any combines running. Now, that's not true further south. You go down into Missouri, there's some activity. But coming across I-80 and 74, no. Now, crop-wise, Nebraska, generally pretty good. Observation is the irrigated crop probably isn't any better than the last couple of years, but the dry land really benefited from having the extra rain this year. A lot of times you're looking at 110, 115 bushel yield in Nebraska for dry land. It's probably closer to 145, 150, even with some pollination problems. Iowa looked pretty good, particularly north. As you go get a little closer to Davenport, get a little closer to that southeast, you get into that heavy rain track that was coming across Missouri. You can see that. You can see some sudden death syndrome popping up in some of the soybean fields. You can see some leaf fungal diseases on a little bit of the corn. But generally speaking, that problem area in Iowa is in that southeastern corner. Coming across Illinois, it's been advertised as being very variable, and I think that's a very accurate statement. The beans seem to be handling a little better than the corn. But again, as been pointed out several times today, as I've talked to producers, there's a lot of holes in those fields, and they're always hard to quantify those. Okay, are they prevent plant, or are they just dragging your yield down as you go through a bare spot?
Now, Chip, I want you to take up the eastern side of the Corn Belt. What do you think crop conditions look like from here all the way to Ohio?
Well, very variable. highly variable. And you know, as Alan mentioned earlier, lots of holes in the field. The thing that I've seen just, I've not been all the way to Ohio, been through most of Indiana and Illinois. The crop has just really changed in the last 10 days. Typically, when you see that speed to maturity, it's at the expense of test weight and maybe some ultimate final yield. So we'll have to see. You know, this weather may be, you know, mid-90s and not super humid, and some wind going to dry this stuff down even quicker. And so we'll have to see when the combines start rolling. But, you know, to me, we had a lot of crop. You could tell that late in the season there were areas that just had, you know, too much rain. That 30 inches of rain in 40 days, it was really showing here in August and September.
Chip Nellinger, of course, is with Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. He's out of Morton, Illinois. So now we've had a look at the east and the west side of the Corn Belt. It's been a battle between the two. The question is, and to this point it appears the west is going to win, but why is that the case, Alan?
Well, first of all, you have to remember there's a lot more acreage in the west. the illustration I've used is that the southern two tiers of counties in Minnesota produce as much corn as the state of Ohio. So if they're having record yields in Minnesota, it'll offset a lot of damage in Ohio. And there's definitely a lot of damage in Ohio. Our virtual corn tour result was 149 for Ohio, and USDA's in a 168. So it's quite a bit of discrepancy there. But again, the main thing is that the upper Midwest got planted early. They're getting full season. They're already 3% of Minnesota's already mature. 2% of North Dakota, a couple percent in South Dakota. So the crop's pretty much made up there. There's still part of it that would be affected by a late September freeze. But, you're looking at a lot of acreage in the Western Corn Belt versus smaller increments, particularly in Ohio and Indiana, that don't look good.
Bill, we're looking forward to not this Friday, but the following Friday, and USDA's World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimates, and more importantly, the next crop production report. Do you suppose USDA will be able to get an accurate handle on the size of both the corn and the soybean crops at this time of year, given the maturity across the Corn Belt?
Well, I think it'll be more accurate than it was in August. I think because you've got the Eastern Belt that's moved along, as we've just discussed, that, you know, it's moved along where you're probably going to be able to get some ear weights and some things like that in some of the southern plots anyhow. I think just going to what you were asking Alan and Chip there, I mean, Illinois kind of is the key, it looks to me like. And if you look at, I went through and did about 12 different county tours where they went out, you know, Farm Bureau elevators, different ones. It seems like they're running 10 to 20% behind a year ago, kind of, if you look at the counts that they go out there and get. That's about where the USDA has Illinois at, about 19%, I think, less than a year ago. So now the question is, when you go out and do those counts, do you take into consideration the holes and the places where there is, you know, isn't anything? So we still got a lot of uncertainty, but I think, you know, the direction that they go on the Illinois crop of this September report is really going to tell us something, I believe.
And what part of the objective survey will play the biggest role?
As far as this September report?
Yep.
I think it's maybe being able to determine some actual ear weights rather than just using average ear weights as they did in August.
And finally, for you, what is it that you suppose producers should be considering? Because most will not have made many sales to this point. They're looking at what they consider a fairly low price, which is actually true. They may be looking at losing money at these levels. How do they get themselves in a position that they might be able to make money, whether that's on paper or in simple cash sales?
Well, and I think that, in my personal opinion, I think that the next couple of weeks may give you some indication as we get some of this eastern harvest starting. How the market reacts to that is going to be real important. And, you know, if we have some poor yields coming in, does the market say, yeah, but we got good stuff coming? Or do we look at it and say, well, that's worse than I thought it was going to be? So I think you have some time that it's not going to hurt you too much to wait, and then let the basis levels kind of help you make that decision. If your basis is fairly tight when you have harvest deliveries, you know, maybe you just go ahead and take the cash sales or take basis contracts and take the cash sales and buy it back on the board if you want to, or use some call options. If it's wider basis, if we're seeing bigger yields than expected, you know, then you may have to go the storage route.
Chip, I want to switch from corn to soybeans with you. Tell me about demand for U.S. soybeans. It's been suspect, and it's not been there in particular, especially from China.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest concern, I think, in the case of beans. Brazil had a big crop. The currency situation makes their beans more competitive. You've seen a slowdown in China, and that's the big question. There's no doubt their economy has slowed. The real question long-term is that going to equate to, you know, lesser protein and soybean demand? And that's uncertain at this point. But, you know, right now that's the issue. They went up in yields in August on that August crop report. It's still early enough that beans are a wild card until you run a combine through them. So likely going to be unchanged this month would be my guess. And that's not going to do the market any favors, I don't think. So I think the weak link of everything here, when you look at corn, beans, and wheat, I think beans are probably the weakest link in the whole situation here.
It is a link that is a global link, Alan. Tell me about the export picture across the planet, because South America, USDA tells us, is poised to become the number one producer, Brazil in particular, I think, number one producer of soybeans on the planet. And this, I don't know whether it changes things exactly, but soybeans are traded year-round from many different ports of call.
Yeah, that's a key point. We've talked for several years now about there being a two-season marketing year. You've got the U.S. Year, 6 months basically. You want to sell 80% of what you're going to sell in that first 6 months out of the U.S. Because after the new crop supplies come out of South America, they're going to have the no interest, no storage, no basis. They're going to be undercutting you. So you do have to – you can't think strictly in U.S. terms. You can't just think, well, as we did last year, well, we only have 92 million bushel carry out. You know, the price has to be sky high because there's always this other supply coming, and now the supply is coming is bigger than what we produce. The other aspect of that is simply that as Brazil has gotten bigger and has more to export, they're getting into our marketing year a little bit with the leftovers. All right, you're starting to see them slow down their monthly exports from 8 million tons plus in July to, I think it was 5.5 in August. But they're still going to be shipping beans in September and October that they did not last year. And that's going to lower the amount of soybeans shipped out of the United States during that time period compared to a year ago. So it does matter what they've got down there. The last point would be, Brazilian farmer right now, because of the weakness in the real, is seeing prices in real terms, his local currency, that are similar to what we had at $14. All right, if you draw a chart with both of them on there, beans in dollars, beans in real, they're at basically equivalent to where we last were when we were $14. That's an incentive to expand acreage, and you're getting 2 to 3% more acres right now is the look for soybeans this fall in Brazil. In Argentina, it's actually 15% right now, but the government's trying to stop that.
Alan, thank you so much. Alan Brugler, of course, is with Brugler Marketing and Management. He's out of Omaha, Nebraska, and Bill Mayer was here from Strategic Farm Marketing, along with Chip Nellinger, who is with Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. Let's take a more in-depth look at the corn and its agronomy just a bit. An agronomist is with us, in fact. That's Todd Steinacher. He is with AgriGold, takes care of a good part of the western part of the state. You heard, I think it was Chip, Todd, tell us that this corn crop looked like it was running out of gas, that it was maturing early. Can you tell me about that process and really what has happened? And I think many would think that there may be some lack of nitrogen left in the corn crop, especially in the eastern Corn Belt. But you're on the western side of the state.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. For the most part, you know, majority of Illinois and the Corn Belt experienced heavy rainfall, heavy saturation in turn early on, causing a lot of, you know, plant available nitrogen be converted from ammonium to nitrate, and really from a denitrification standpoint, being lost to saturated soils and moved throughout the profile. And for the most part, when the crop got into that mid-June time frame, that second rapid uptake growth, majority of that nitrogen was already in the nitrate form and in the second foot. So as we did approach tasseling in the grain field period, a lot of these fields did not have enough nitrogen, so we started to see that firing early on. One thing we're starting to see it is, you know, is that, you know, yield itself, heavy kernels, big ears, you know, they're going to require quite a bit of nitrogen to fill them out. And if they're not getting that nitrogen from the soil, they're going to start rotting from the stalk and the leaves. In turn, we could see some you know, lighter test weights, smaller kernels.
Yeah. Well, I've heard, you mentioned the stalk, so I've heard quite a bit about corn not having a particularly good stalk and starting to lean pretty hard already this year.
Definitely, and really what's contributing to that is, you know, really shallow root structure, but then we've also seen more disease pressure this year really attacking that plant. So with stress on stress from the nitrogen and disease pressure, it's really having a vulnerable stalk.
What are your expectations? Do you suppose that ear weights will be down dramatically? in parts, in large parts of the Midwest?
I would say if the field experienced heavy amount of saturation, lost a lot of nitrogen, and the top-end yield potential still there, and additional nitrogen was not applied from a side dress, rescue treatment of the plane, you know, we could start seeing some smaller kernels and lower test weights.
Do you think that in Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, where they had as much as 6 inches in June and July, which is a lot of rain for that time, that they will suffer a similar problem?
Most likely. It really depends on how that plant was developing early on, the root structure. If it was able to withstand all that stress, probably so. But if it had a issue emerging, you know, the first 28 days of its growth cycle, you know, it's going to be under stress the whole time.
Thank you so much, Todd. We appreciate you being with us. Todd Steinacher is with AgriGold. On my other side to the right is Mark Sloysner. He's the state statistician for Illinois. You hear him regularly on Tuesday afternoons with us with an update of the crop progress report. But I want to talk to you about state statisticians, the work they do. Not too much time, about 3 minutes or so, to tell me how that happens and what's the difference between USDA's August and September crop production reports and the way you collect the data.
All right, I'll do brief on the state statistician duties. It's outreach and communication, so going to trade shows like the Farm Progress Show. Also conferences that might be put on by the Farm Bureau or other groups like that. I also do college recruiting. If you've got a youngster you know that's looking for a job, working for the USDA or any other part of federal government, all the jobs are advertised on usajobs.gov. And in particular, we're looking for people with agricultural knowledge and statistical knowledge. We'd love to have them work for NAS.
Math and science, that's the thing that you need, right?
The STEM fields, as they say. Mm. Science, technology, what, engineering and mathematics. That was my schooling was mathematics.
How do the objective survey parts differ from August to September in the NAS collections?
Two major differences. In August, we did half of our fields, not all of our fields. So we're going to double the size for September. Secondly, the crop is more mature, so we'll be measuring some different things. In Illinois last month, most ear weights were determined by measuring the length of the kernel rows. A good long ear tends to produce more grain weight for that ear than a short ear. It's not a perfect indicator, but it's a good indicator. Here in September, most of the fields will be at least in the dent stage, and we will grab some ears and send them to our lab in St. Louis, where they will be shelled and the moisture content and shelling fraction will be determined. For those fields that are mature, and we had 21% mature across the state as in our last weekly crop progress report, the enumerators will harvest all the ears in their layout in their unit. They will send a sample of them to the lab. They'll get a field weight for all the ears they harvest, and a sample will go to the lab for shelling content and shelling fraction and moisture content.
All right. Thank you so much. We appreciate all the work that you do. Look forward to having you maybe on one of our commodity weeks really soon.
That would be great, Todd.
Could
I'd love
we do
it.
That September the 11th on Friday afternoon? You can think about that one. Thanks so much. That, of course, is Mark Sloysner. He is the state statistician for the state of Illinois. We're glad to have him here. We'll be here for the whole hour, in fact, so stay with us in the second half hour. We have a whole bunch of great folks that will be coming up to talk to you more about agriculture and the University of Illinois.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
It's National Blueberry Popsicle Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1666, the Great Fire of London began in the shop of the King's Baker. After burning for 4 days, more than 13,000 buildings had been destroyed. In 1752, it was the last day of the Julian calendar in Great Britain and the British colonies. The Gregorian calendar, designed to correct the extra leap year day problem, went into effect the next day, tomorrow being September 14th. Hence, 11 days were dropped. Most other countries made the adjustment in 1582. In 1930, the first non-stop airplane flight from Europe to the U.S. became a reality as a pair of French pilots landed in Valley Stream, New York, after a 37-hour flight across the Pacific. In 1935, the Labor Day hurricane hit the Florida Keys. Over 400 were killed, and the railway to Key West was destroyed. Winds were estimated at 200 miles per hour. And in 1995, Bjork Hillstrom died. He was the inventor of the Silva compass, which featured a rotation compass dial and a transparent protractor base plate. He also wrote, "Be expert with map and compass, considered by many to be the Bible of orienteering." And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for WILL.
From the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Let's check in on the cash side of the marketplace. Brian Stark is on stage with us. He's the manager at the Anderson's facility in Champaign. Thanks, Brian, for being here. Glad to have you on stage with us.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Tell me about the process that you have to put the elevator through to get it ready for a harvest season.
Well, obviously, we're trying to consolidate like commodities as we carry in some grain from prior years, if that be the case, and obviously just normal maintenance as we're getting ready for a lot of volume moving through our equipment. So that's the biggest thing, and I think we're about there and ready to go.
How much storage will you have on the ground this year as compared to previous years, do you suppose?
That's a great question. We have 4 million ground capacity for piling corn. We haven't used that up until last year. It was 7 years prior to that in 2007, last time we had to use all 4 million space. I would imagine that there's a chance we could at least use at least half to three quarters of that, but a lot will be dependent on how big the crop is.
How quickly will you want to move the crop in? And you know I'm asking the question about half off of drying. I know you probably aren't ready quite to answer that, but will that happen? Will there be a reason for that to happen this year?
I think anything's possible at this stage of the game, but as I look at what has driven those types of decisions the last few years, it's not the same type of marketplace that we're seeing right now where there's a strong demand up front for nearby corn and a short supply. So I think there isn't an incentive to do it today, but that doesn't mean that there won't be something that pops up here in the next couple of weeks. I'd say right now it's greater than a 50-50 percentage that we're not going to have anything like that.
As we roll through the month into the month of August and starting September, we're now at the verge of harvest. How does old crop, new crop basis change, and what has happened with basis for you there at the Andersons?
Well, I think if you look and compare where we are today versus where we were last year, we're about 6 cents on average stronger, narrower in basis for fall corn. I think that's obviously an indication of what we're expecting the size of the crop at least to be to start. The end user, I think, as you move east, the domestic processor is going to have firm basis. A lot of the ethanol plants in eastern Indiana are bidding 10 over the D's for normal gut slot October corn. I don't anticipate that weakening because their crop has been seriously hurt this growing season. And I think that's an early indication of what we might see as we go into the winter, spring, and summer months. Basis should be firm. And as we talked about the dichotomy of the west to east corn belt, I think that's the direction of the grain movement this crop year. A lot of the grain will move west to east.
Thank you so much, Brian. We appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, Todd.
Brian Stark, of course, is with the Andersons, and he joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You can find us online. Visit willag.org. That's willag.org. Stay with us if you can. Some of our radio stations will leave us now. Others will be with us, and we'll be glad to post all of our programming content to willag.org by later this evening. On stage here at the Farm Progress Show, we'll continue on. Aaron Johnson is with us. He's the Executive Vice President and COO of Farm Credit Illinois. Aaron, thanks for coming in. Glad to have you here. Glad that, well, you're not very far from home there in Mahomet, so we're glad to have you here. I want you to talk just a little bit about the 100 years celebration that Farm Credit is now in the midst of.
Great. Thanks, Todd. We're kicking it off here at the show, actually. We have been a cooperative now for 100 years as of July 2016. And so in commemoration of that 100 years, we are going to give away $100,000 here this week at the show to 10 ag organizations around the state of Illinois. And that's First Farm Credit and Farm Credit Illinois. And we are big supporters of that foundation that we need in agriculture. So to celebrate with our members and with the ag community, that's our commitment to is to provide a $100,000 gift donation to those 10 organizations this week.
Farm Credit is a cooperative. In this case, you're really a cooperative. You're asking folks to come in and vote on which charities should receive a $10,000 gift.
Yes, we're actually going to allocate the $100,000 by the votes that we receive here at the show. So when you come into the tent over this three-day period, you can vote for which of those 10 ag organizations you would like to see the money donated to. And we'll follow the ag community and our members' lead, and we will then come out and do a tally and announce those donations at a later date.
How does this tie into Farm Credit, its history, how it was created, and what it's meant to do in service in rural communities?
Well, we were created because of the need to supply capital and to assist rural America and agriculture through the growth period of the early 1900s. And since then, we've been through all kinds of ups and downs with agriculture, and it's our job to make sure that we're always here for agriculture. So to tie into the foundation of 4-H FFA, our land-grant universities, and everything that makes agriculture here so special and wonderful, that's what we're here for, to help farm families succeed.
Can we switch topics just a little bit and talk about banking and finances? This has been a really tough year for farmers to look at. They're really very scared, probably, maybe a good word at this point, about what their finances look like. Some of them certainly will lose money for the year. From your perspective, what are the things that they need to do now to get themselves in a better financial condition, or to start to let you know that the condition they're in isn't as good as they would like?
It's really analysis of their own individual operations, and what we see is everything is so different around the state of Illinois and even within our customers. And so you've got to look at each individual situation. Working capital is still king. It always has been. So we've just came through a really great 10-year period in agriculture with strong income. Our members have really built up solid financial statements, so they're able to withstand some of this going forward. But it's really a cash flow. Got to look at that cash flow and make sure you've got enough liquidity and working capital to take advantage of those opportunities when they're there. And then it's all going to be about efficiency. It's going to be about technology that can help you become more efficient, so that margin that's tightened up on us can go the other way again. And we've had a great run of watching young people get back involved in production agriculture in the state. We want that to continue. So, you know, our job is to help each of these operations find a way to keep that margin going in a positive direction. And with what's happened with ag prices, you know, commodity prices and cash rents, that's tough right now. But there will be ways to do it.
And one other topic, farmland and farmland values. I know that you all watch that very closely. Are you very concerned that the largest asset producers own will devalue in the next couple of years?
You know, it's always a concern, and it was more of a concern probably when we saw the strong run-up from 2010, where we just went through those huge increases. We're seeing it level off, and our benchmark study recently has shown about a 5%. Decrease off the top end, and it's very local yet. There are some areas that are still as high as they were at the top of the market, others that are down 5 to 15 in our 60-county area. And we think if everything stabilizes here, we're going to see another 5 to 15% probably over the next 12 months. But when you look at where we came at from in 2010, it's not a dire situation. We still have very strong underlying basis for this farm real estate today.
Aaron, thank you so much. Aaron Johnson, of course, is the Executive Vice President and COO of Farm Credit Illinois.
Thank you, Todd.
Thank you so much. Gary Schnitke is here as well. Let's continue our conversation about agricultural economics. Gary, of course, is an agricultural economist, a farm business, farm management specialist at the U of I. Gary, thanks for being with us this afternoon. You know, Aaron just told us, and you know this very well from the numbers that come in from the FBFM, or the Farm Business Farm Management Record Keeping Service, that you're able to see and analyze in bulk, that producers are going to suffer relatively this year, certainly compared to previous years. Tell me about the last 5 years, producers. How good were they in the historical context?
I think
so. The last 5 years, we were 2010, 2011, 2012.
To the bus,
to a certain
and
extent,
then
2013,
get my house
we were
sorted.
High fives,
then leave
low
for
sixes
work.
For corn. That will probably, when we look back at it, be another golden age in agriculture, and they were well above any prices that we've seen in the past, and likely are higher than the prices that we're going to see for the next year or two.
And the next 5 years, you predict what?
So that's the question. Where we're at right now, obviously, is low or mid threes to high three corn, 350 to 375 would catch most bids right now. If you're looking at selling for 2015 crop, that's probably where you're at. I mean, there's not too many people calling for anything higher than that. And going into 2016, you know, 375, 380, 390 is about where expectations are right now, and not too many people are calling for anything higher than that. So as we're looking forward, I think you have to think about something dramatic happening to get us out higher, much higher than that, drought or short crop someplace around the world, or brightening demand situation. And obviously either one of those can happen, but you probably shouldn't be betting on that right now for 2015 or 2016.
And speaking of 2016,
Kalpana Sharma, who writes on issues affecting women and the economy for major Indian newspapers, including The Hindu.
You have suggested
women
they will
actually
need to
do
cut
make
that
their
price.
Mark in
we'll
the
talk
Indian
about
economy,
by how much in just a
what
second.
What they do is not
but let's
accounted
go through
for.
The items
so,
and
for instance,
see where
60%
input prices
of
might
the work
be cut.
That is done in
so,
agriculture
so
is
we're looking
actually
at a situation
women,
where we have lower revenue and we got to get
that is not accounted for as the kind of
those,
you know, economic
that
participation
level.
That we normally speak about.
Some of the items
about.
That we're going to have
they're
to look
in the
at cutting
informal
are cash
economy,
rents
but
for
not
renting
the formal
land,
economy.
Fertilizer
yeah.
cost, Indian seed cost, and pesticide cost. Those four items, along with machinery depreciation, if you can include machinery depreciation in there, make up 80% of the cost of producing corn and soybeans in the state. So those are the areas where we're going to have to look at cost cuts coming from.
And how much do you suppose we'll need to cut?
Well, conservatively, if we're looking at 375 corn, Central Illinois 200 bushels, that's $750 revenue. Another $50 for ARC payments, you're looking at $800. So we got to get revenue or cost below that. And right now we're probably running $860, $870. So we have to have a $100 cut in cost.
And that comes from...
So that's the question of the hour, right? So where do we get $100 of cost?
Everybody will want to know, how do you cut $100 out of a budget? How do you cut more than 10% out of your budget?
So that's an 11% cut, actually, if you want another precise number. But 11% cut, how do you get that out of your budget? The first one that's going to have to decline is cash rents. So we're going to have to see declines in cash rents. We're also going to have to look at some sort of cuts in the other big items, fertilizer, seed, and chemicals.
Hey, can I ask a different question? Because 10% doesn't sound that much, but we haven't talked about the salary or the management payment. Yeah. Is that 10% cut just to get to zero?
That is just to get to zero.
So that's 10% not to lose money, but you don't have any money to spend after
no,
the fact.
No. So. We're talking about a marginal income at that standpoint. It wouldn't cover family living at that point in time or anything of that nature. So we're talking about a historically large cut to get to break-even levels.
One other item before I let you go for the day. There was just a brand-new release, and you, I think, are the statistics person behind this. that looked at farmland values in the state of Illinois. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
So that's the Illinois Society of Professional Farm Managers and Rural Appraisers. They released their mid-year survey, and it does show price declines across the state, 2 to 7% across the state. So from beginning of the year to the end of the year, 2 to 7% cuts in farmland prices.
And how does that change from the top of the bottom of the state to the from the low production to the high production areas?
So we saw higher cuts in our lower productivity areas, 7% on the lower productivity area lands, and 2% in the higher productivity land.
And one more item, we have the Farm Economic Series that's coming up in the month of December. It's been scheduled. It's December the 14th. And for the whole of the week, the 5 days across the state of Illinois, who is this particular seminar designed for, and how soon do you suppose we can sign up? I think that'll happen probably in the next month and a half or
so. Yeah, so we're busy putting the Farm Economic Summit topics together as we talk. It's for anybody that is involved in the economics of agribusiness, so farmers, lenders, farm managers, agribusinesses, anybody interested in farm economics as it relates to agriculture. Our audiences are primarily farmers, lenders, and farm managers.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you being with us. That, of course, is Gary Schnitke. He is a farm business, farm management specialist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Glad to have him on WILL AM 580 radio. Let's continue on with our conversation. About 10 minutes left, and we've been joined on stage here at the Farm Progress Show by the president of the University of Illinois. In fact, the 20th president of the University of Illinois, Tim Colleen. Thank you so much, Tim, for being with us. I do appreciate you taking the time to spend with us today.
Delighted to be with you.
I've got a couple of questions for you. And I suppose that you will have some answers, but they're not the easiest questions, but you're the president of the to answer.
I get all kinds of questions.
So a couple of weeks ago, I was at the Illinois State Fair. Governor Rauner was there. You, of course, are really familiar with the budgets. He had he was pretty pointed on a couple of particular items. One of them, he suggested there were simply too many administrators on the University of Illinois campus. That might be a place for savings. I bet you certainly have been working pretty hard at that and looking for places to save money. What I really want to know are, as a land-grant university, what are the essential items that you think we need to meet the three-pronged teaching, research, and outreach mission?
That's a great question. I think the land-grant mission is alive and well and kicking, I would say, on our campuses, plural, and particularly in the Urbana-Champaign campus. We need to be excellent on all of those fronts, excellent in what I think of as knowledge dissemination in our classrooms, you know, building the human capital that's going to make a difference in the state. We need to be excellent in our creation of new knowledge through research and development and participation in economic development of the state. We're supported by the taxpayers, so we're here now in this state. We need to be an anchor institution. And I'm happy to say that our university is world-class on all of those fronts, literally world-class. The substance is there. We have fantastic faculty. We have a wonderful student body. We're about to announce a bumper crop of enrollments next week. It'll be a big number of Illinois students coming in on board, and we're very excited about that. So we have to look at our mission, and it's to support the public good through human capital development, new knowledge acquisition, outreach, and development of ideas and concepts that make a difference in the world. So now we need to do that with an eye on efficiency and effectiveness. We can't grow populations of administrators, for example, that take too much, consume too much of the budget. So we are looking very carefully at the business model. I would call it the business model of the university. Looking at all aspects of it, we're looking at the kinds of courses we give, the sort of, we're doing a review of the academic programs. We're looking at hard at the administrative functions to make sure that we're not doing duplicative work, or we're looking at shared services so that if you can centralize some things, it's better. Sometimes it's better to do it. So we're taking a sophisticated look at our business model. I think in general that the business models of the 70s for higher education are no longer functional or applicable to the time we're in now. So we have some traditional ways of doing things that we're going to evolve away from. And we have made significant steps towards savings. We've, for example, had a hiring freeze. We've also frozen tuition. So we're going to keep affordability as a major component of what I'm talking about. That human capital development has to be accessible and affordable to young people. So we're going to do all of that. I'm interacting regularly with Governor Rauner and his folks, and we're citing the things that we've done already and will do in the future to make sure we're effective stewards of public resources and we do our mission really well.
You suggested some things about the organization and how it's put together. You know, the mission of U of I Extension, at least in the state of Illinois generally, has been limited to programming generated in the College of ACES, Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, the college I belong to. There's already a plan in place to expand the scope of extension across campus. There have been some, we call it community engagement sometimes. It's the outreach program. There's been mostly pilot programs that have been put together. Do you see ramping these programs up in the future?
Yeah, I see extension as sort of in the legacy. It's done amazing things over a century and a half of activity, and now we need to turbocharge it for the modern economy. And I think the fact that it has served the agricultural community so well is very important, and we can serve the agricultural community even more so with high tech, with access to new approaches, IT-enriched approaches, et cetera. I see, personally, extension as a magnificent asset for the University of Illinois. It's everywhere in the state. We want to have statewide impact. We want to recruit great students. We want to impact the local economies, the regional economies in effective ways. And we're living in a time when that's a knowledge-based economy. So extension is pretty much our muscle to actually impact the statewide economy at scale and in the places where people live and communities need help.
Speaking of which, I'm told that you visited in far southern Illinois, I think maybe in Marion, fabrication lab, which is one of the pilot programs across campus. I think it uses library sciences.
3D printing, they're doing exciting work in a mall. Right there, using 3D printing capabilities and training, a new generation of young people who are looking for job prospects and opportunities in hands-on high-tech and emerging areas that are going to be important for the future of the regional economy there. So I think those kind of pilots are very important. That doesn't mean we stop doing the service to the agricultural community, the farming community, the families. We need to do even more of that with the new and modern and evolving technologies that those farming families and those communities really need to. So I see it as an addition, not an either-or opportunity. We're going to do pilots. We're going to expand them. We're going to tailor them to what the regional needs are, the local, and we're going to connect it to the what I think of as the mothership of the major and the fathership of our wonderful campuses, so that that expertise is deployed most effectively for the state of Illinois. And we'll do that without a huge administrative burden.
Hey, one final question for you. As almost everybody knows, the number of individuals that are directly involved with the farming operation has been shrinking for quite a long time. The commercial agriculture, of course, raises, and these are family farmers, but they still raise the bulk of the food consumed in the United States, outside of the U.S. as well. Is there a need to rethink how institutions, places like Purdue, Illinois, Iowa State, might work together to provide research-based content to farmers throughout the Midwest?
I would say the short answer to that is yes. I think as things evolve and business models evolve, economic pursuits change their nature, we need to be agile, nimble, and effective, and collaborative. I think we're moving into an era where collaboration is becoming even more important. We need specialists who have deep understanding of particular aspects of it, say fertilizer use or insect management, but we need to collaborate across these party lines. So I think institutional collaboration is important, and I think the Midwest is a wonderful place to think that through. It's a great question. I think we can collaborate more effectively, and our focus has to be on serving the providers of food on the table. We're going to have 9 billion mouths to feed before you know it, and we need to find ways to do that effectively. We need to worry about supply chains, distribution chains, pesticide utilization, technology for harvesting and hybrid seeds, and all of the above. And we need to make sure that the kind of training and educational components are in place. And the human capital, the students that we're delivering to the world, are really going to be the keystone here. Our major product is students. Everything we do, everything I'm talking about here, is all going to be student-centered. It's all about the students. And, of course, they come from families, and most of them come from Illinois families.
Tim Killeen, of course, is the president of the University of Illinois. Bob Hauser is the dean of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. Recruitment is an important part of the university system, the College of ACES. How do you bring in and attract really good students? What is important about the University of Illinois that makes it attractive to a student that would like to go here?
Well, of course, it varies according to the student's interests, and we're able to offer a wide variety of interests that sometimes students aren't aware of, and that's a large part of our recruiting effort, is to allow them to understand that we are more than just producing corn and soybeans. We're about a food system. We're about a food system that is involving production, processing, distribution, trade, marketing, regulations, the environment. We also do a lot with health and with family needs. Okay, so we're a very eclectic college covering a lot of different areas. But the bottom line is, and this should be, I think, at the top of their list in terms of importance, and that is, at the end of 4 years, there's a job. There's either a pretty good job in the market, or there's a great opportunity in graduate school or professional school.
And for College of ACES grads, are there jobs at the end of the 4 years?
Yes, it's been a wonderful recent period of growth in jobs, and consequently growth in our enrollment because of that. We've increased student numbers, both incoming freshmen and transfers, by about 20% in the last 4 or 5 years, and I would argue that's a result of those jobs that are waiting for them.
Dean Hauser, thank you so much. Tim Killeen, president of the university, thank you so much for joining us here at the Farm Progress Show. Give them a nice round of applause. Of course, you've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. This is WILL AM 580, WILL FM 90.9, HD3 Urbana. We're coming up on the top of the hour. It'll be 3 o'clock in the Central Time Zone. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Do pick us up online if you'd like to hear our programming again. You can do that at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org.